What's up, guys? Welcome to the Road Podcast, the podcast where we talk about overall well-being, health, and all the crazy things that happen on this road that we call life. I'm your host, Jonathan Shane. What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode. Today, we have special guest Danielle Hamilton. She is freaking awesome, man. Going into the new year, I just thought this would be a really good deep dive into blood sugar regulation. She is an amazing human being, blood sugar specialist. We get into all of her creds in the beginning of the podcast. I really enjoy this podcast. You know, she's a fellow FNTP. We think a lot alike. I agree with her on so much. Like, I don't think there's anything I disagree with her on, actually. I think, like, and I mean this not in a weird way, but she's kind of like the female version of me in terms of women's health. Like, I really do cherish her mind and the way she's been able to impact the women around her. She's an amazing human being, very intelligent woman. So I hope you get a lot out of the podcast going into the new year. You know, carnivore months right now, I'm even doing the carnivore diet. And I just hope that, you know, this helps not create confliction and more confusion, but brings clarity when it comes to dealing with some of the symptoms of being low carb and keto, if you have them, and how to address them in a healthy, holistic way. So without further ado, enjoy. Welcome back, guys, to the Road Podcast. I am here today with Danielle Hamilton. I'm so excited for this. Danielle Hamilton is a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, and a restorative wellness practitioner who specializes in blood sugar regulation and digestion. She became interested in blood sugar issues when she learned what insulin resistance was at the root of her PCOS. She was able to reverse her PCOS, cystic acne, PMS, and weight loss resistance by reversing insulin resistance. Her mission is to help others uncover their blood sugar and insulin issues, as most people don't know the early signs, as well as help them optimize digestion for low-carb diets. Danny promotes a holistic approach to reversing insulin resistance, which goes beyond just changing macros. She is the host of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast and the creator of the Blood Sugar Mastery Program. How are you doing today, Danielle?
I'm very excited to have this conversation and also thinking I need to get you on my podcast to have this conversation. So really excited that we'll definitely have long talks about this because I'm really excited to dive into this much needed area of explanation and exploration.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I kind of just read over a brief overview, but for those of you that don't know you, just like, you know, and they kind of just heard what I just said and they're like, oh wow, that's a lot. Let's start with like, where do you feel were like some of the key points in your health journey that got you from like point A to point B?
Yeah, key points. Sugar lover from the jump. Grew up in the 80s and 90s, low fat era, lots of childhood illnesses, antibiotics as I got older, allergies, asthma, eczema, chronic sinus infections, needed multiple medications and prescriptions and inhalers and allergy shots. And this was my early 20s. My health was really deteriorating. And I was working as a speech therapist in a nursing home at the time. And I was just noticing the long list of diagnoses and prescriptions that they had and saying, oh my goodness, I'm just right on track to having this happen. Mm. And like we didn't have all these medications when, you know, back in the day, like how come we need them now? And it was just something that always like perplexed me. And I happened to come across the book, The Paleo Diet Solution by Rob Wolf, and it completely flipped everything I knew on its head. Mm. And it was like, don't fear salt, embrace salt, don't fear meat and fat, embrace it and get rid of the processed food. And that's what's causing problems. And everything just made so much sense to me. And I switched my diet to eating paleo. And effortlessly, my allergies, asthma, sinus infections, other infections, they just all like miraculously went away. And I got to get off all my medications. It was amazing. And then my health sort of took another turn where later that year, it was really, really stressful. And I started to develop symptoms of PCOS. So I was gaining weight. I had really bad acne. I lost my cycle. And I had no energy. I had all these hormonal symptoms. And I was like, well, this diet just healed me. There's no way it's making me sick. So because I believed in eating in a paleo way, like I'm not going to reintroduce processed foods. I knew that wasn't the answer, but I didn't change anything because I'm like, well, I'm already doing everything I can for PCOS, which is take out gluten, take out dairy, don't eat refined sugar. I'm like, I'm doing all these things. So I might as well just paleo harder. So since nothing changed, nothing changed.
Yeah.
And obviously I was just still struggling, and I was trying to impact my sex hormones and lower my testosterone and increase my progesterone. And I was just getting nowhere. And it wasn't until I heard this podcast from Megan Ramos, and she said, PCOS is the diabetes of the ovaries. And I almost drove my car off the road because I was just in shock. I was like, wait, diabetes, doesn't that have to do with blood sugar? I'm like, okay, what do I know about blood sugar? I was like, nothing. So I didn't know anything about it. And meanwhile, it was like ravaging my life. And so I looked at my paleo diet and I was like, okay, carbohydrates, I know what carbs are, but I never thought I had to pay attention to them because I thought they were paleo carbs, they're healthy carbs. So I looked back and I was like, okay, my diet consists of fruit and smoothies and acai bowls and bananas and sweet potatoes and plantains and plantain chips and kombucha and coconut sugar and maple syrup, because those are all paleo, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, my diet was so heavy in those foods. And I think at the same time, I finally embraced fat. And so I was always heavily into eating carbs, and then I embraced fat, and together it didn't do well for me in terms of this like overabundance of intaking energy and driving insulin resistance. So I started taking those out of my diet and just replaced all those dense carb sources with fat. And I adopted a ketogenic paleo diet, real food diet. And it was like a miracle. Everything, just the weight fell off. I stopped breaking out. It took about 4 or 5 menstrual cycles to actually have an impact on my menstrual cycle. I was like waiting for it. I was listening to podcasts, like, how long does it take to like affect your PCOS and your PMS? Because I had horrible PMS, the worst bloating. I would break up with whoever I was dating the week before my cycle. I'd have really bad breakouts. I mean, I was a mess when it came to like symptoms of PMS and PMDD, actually. And all of those P acronyms, PCOS, PMS, PMDD, they mm-hmm. all eventually went away, probably within 6 months of starting a keto diet and doing intermittent fasting. And it was amazing. And I wanted to scream it from the rooftops. And then I did keto pretty strictly. I couldn't do a lot of carb ups, especially at the beginning, because it would really reawaken my sugar dragon, which mm-hmm. Which kind of dictates like, hey, you got some sugar, you should probably get more. And it starts to take over my thoughts and my mental space. And so I really had to be very strict at the beginning. I couldn't even do any sort of sweeteners. I couldn't do any sort of fat bombs, even if they were unsweetened, because my mind was like, go home and have fat bombs. Like it was, I still had that same mentality of like, oh, you can have this treat. And I couldn't do things like raspberries because it would just start this whole cascade of just craving foods. And that was something I really wanted to get rid of. So I was pretty strict for a while. Eventually I was able to do a little bit of carb ups, but didn't really do much. And then it was about 2 years later, right after my wedding, which happened to be at the very beginning of COVID. So I got married March 7th, 2020. After that stress, I felt like my body needed carbs, and it was a different kind of feeling. It wasn't the sugar dragon being like, you should get sugar. I was like, I feel like I might need to incorporate some carbs. So I started incorporating carbohydrates. That was like around the first time I got a CGM. And my responses to the carbs were not good. And I was like, wow, this is why, you know, I really needed keto. But we need to remember that you lose that first phase insulin response when you're keto. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like your pancreas has some insulin sitting around ready to go for when you eat carbohydrates. But when you're on a ketogenic diet, your pancreas is so efficient that it's like, you know, we have this insulin waiting around. She's never using it. Let's just clean this up. We'll divert it, you know, recycle the resources, use it elsewhere. And then, so if a person who does a ketogenic diet eats carbohydrates, they don't have that first phase insulin response. So their blood sugar might go up higher mm-hmm. than a person who does eat carbohydrates. This doesn't mean that you're insulin resistant. It just means that you don't have that first phase insulin response, and it can come back after you do it for a little while. So eventually my tolerance to carbohydrates improved. And I found that it was really helpful because I started to have some symptoms before then. And I think I ketoed and fasted a little bit too long, and we could talk about that. But once I added back in carbs, it was amazing because I felt the exact same as I did on keto. It was like, oh, wow, I don't have the sugar crashes, the cravings, like the low energy dips. All of a sudden, it was like I could have my carbs and eat them too. Mm-hmm. I had much better control over it. I didn't have binge eating anymore. I could eat something and leave it. I felt much more in control. And I could always go back to keto. Like sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do a week of keto, or I'll switch back and, you know, I'm going to have more carbs this week. And I've sort of been in that space ever since. And actually, you know, I haven't really shared any of this publicly because a lot of people want to just imitate what people are doing, you know, what influencers or other people on the internet are doing. And so I haven't publicly shared this yet, but I'm really happy to have this platform to do so because I feel like it needs to come out. So over the summer, I started to notice that I was putting on a little bit of weight. Mm-hmm. And I live in Florida. So in the summer is the time I'm inside the most. And, you know, I was not moving. I had all these injuries. And so I started to put on weight, and I'm like, you know what, let me do strict keto. I haven't done it in a long time. I did strict keto and put on 8 pounds almost overnight. Like it was just like, boom, 8 pounds. And I was like, what is happening? And I'm like, you know what, maybe I need to do protein sparing modified fasting. So do it harder. Guess what? That like broke me. I was so depressed for 5 days. That was the worst experience I've ever had with a diet intervention. And I was like, you know what, maybe my body doesn't want carbohydrate restriction right now. Maybe my body, that's not the problem. You know, the blood sugar and insulin, that's not always the problem. I got my insulin tested. It was 1.7. My blood sugar is always good. That's not my problem right now. I don't need to be in ketosis all the time. I got an organic acids test, and it said I wasn't in ketosis, and it said my ketones were like off the charts. I'm still making ketones. My body is effective at burning fat. I got what I needed mm-hmm. from ketosis, and I'm not saying I'm never going to do another day or week or stint of keto, but what I am trying to say is that keto is not always the answer. Restricting mm-hmm. carbs is not always the answer. And even I, you know, just I have to learn through doing and experiencing. And I see this a lot. I see like, I need to go back to carnivore because that really helped me. I need to go back to keto because it really helped me. It's like, it may have helped you at first because you needed to switch over your metabolic machinery, become metabolically flexible, heal your metabolism. But maybe what's happening is something else, something deeper. And for mm-hmm. me, I definitely needed to get outside more because, you know, light circadian rhythm hormones, I needed to move more. So I started doing personal training, which is really helpful. And I need to detox. I am a very poor detoxifier, poor methylator. And I have lots of difficulties with that. So I started doing a targeted detoxification protocols. And now I'm on my way to losing that 8 pounds that really stuck. Mm. So it's exciting because I'm realizing that, okay, it's not just about like, you can never have carbs, or if you have carbs, you gain weight. Like I put the carbs back in and I started losing weight. And I'm not the only person who this has happened to. There's so many people, a colleague of mine said that she had a client who was doing carnivore, was super plateaued, regained all this weight that she had lost, and she added back in carbs and started losing weight. And then she talked to her again and she's like, oh, I'm kind of plateaued. And she's like, are you still doing the carbs? And she's like, no, I went back to carnivore. It's like, and she's like, why did you do that? And she's like, well, you know, I already kind of told my family that I'm doing carnivore. And it's so interesting how we can develop this identity around a diet, or like, you know, my handle is about blood sugar mastery and my program, but blood sugar mastery does not mean never have a carb again. Amen. Mm-hmm. It means, you know, have a good balance of your blood sugar, be able to tolerate some carbohydrates, have your insulin in an optimal range, and then flex in and out, do all the things from there. So that's my long story. I'll stop.
Oh man. No. I love it. There's so many rabbit holes I want to go down right now, but I have to control myself. Okay, well, for a little bit. Anyways, all right. So let's start at the beginning real quick. I just want to go over a couple things. So you
Sure.
talked about the PCOS, and we both know in the literature it's pretty strong that like a ketogenic diet can be extremely beneficial for PCOS and stuff. And so just real quick, just gloss over this. Is someone listening right now that heard that part of the story and they're like, oh man, like that's me. How important do you feel like if they've never been keto, if they've never done keto, or never really cut out the refined processed foods and carbohydrates, how important, how vital do you think that it is for them to do so in order to see some of those symptoms go away? And obviously, I know that you're not saying that it's 100% foolproof, but like, how important if they're like, hey, how important is it that I just figure out how to do this for a period of time to heal these things?
I think that it is so impactful for like the vast majority of people I see. And I think that the trajectory would be start with real food. Don't take the carbs out yet. And, start eating real food, cooking food from home, developing those habits, and then start playing with lowering the carbs, increasing the fat, because it is so vital to do practices, whether it's eating, nutrition, movement, all these things to impact our insulin levels, which if our insulin levels are high, it's going to drive high androgens and testosterone for a lot of for women, for most women, and sort of the reverse in men where it drives higher estrogen levels. So dialing in your insulin, it doesn't necessarily for every person need to be ketogenic, but I find that it really fast tracks everything, and it gives you that sort of flexible metabolism. And it's not that you have to stay there forever, but I do feel like it is fast tracking your progress. And perhaps some people might need a little bit more help than just that, but it's almost like that is the foundational layer, because perhaps you won't need to go any further than doing just that to heal your PCOS. So I think it's really worth a shot for everyone to try. And in that sort of progression. And because I just see so much success with it.
No, I agree with that, and I think it's important to talk about a little bit because I feel like a lot of people, even men, but women too, like they just they're not aware of how related a lot of sex hormone conditions are to insulin and stress hormones and the fact like we don't think about how interconnected these things are. Like when we think of like PCOS, and we go, oh well, if I have really high testosterone, like no one goes, oh well, maybe it's because of these muffins I eat every morning. But it's like, well, it might be because of the muffins you eat every morning. And like people have a hard time connecting those dots, and they're not properly educated on it. Like from what I've gathered from clients I've worked with, when they have PCOS and they come in and they're like, hey, like I want to work on this, well, what has your doctor told you? It's always a medication. They never attack the waffles or the toaster strudels or any of that. They're like, here's the pill. And it's like, well, yeah, that might help, but if you really want to deal with this, you have to be able to, because medication is kind of like a band-aid on a wound that needs stitches. And I'm not saying that band-aids aren't good. I'm just saying, like, if you put a band-aid on a wound that needs stitches, when you take the band-aid off, it's going to start bleeding profusely, or you're going to cause internal bleeding, right? And neither are good. And it's the same thing. Like, if we really want to deal with the root cause, I know as a holistic practitioner, we both are into root causes, and it's like we have to create homeostasis in the body and really realizing how each system is interconnected and how that can result in certain manifestations of symptoms like PCOS or PMDD is like super empowering and important. So that's kind of, I wanted you to go over that because I just feel like it's super important that women are able to connect those dots and go, oh, well, if I'm struggling with this, like maybe it is my food, maybe it is these things, and just learning their bodies and how they're connected. Like a lot, I don't think a lot of people know that most of women's testosterone is produced in the adrenal glands. People don't know that, right? And they're like, but it is, and it's very closely related to pregnenolone and corticosteroids, and that's that in, impacts insulin levels and the pancreas, and like it's all, there's so much going on.
Yeah, and I remember in nutritional therapy school, because we both trained at the NTA, that diagram, I don't know if you remember this, but like the waterfalls of how blood sugar is like a foundational it's not a hormone, but insulin is the hormone, right? So blood sugar is a foundation for all of our hormone health. Same thing with our stress levels and with our circadian rhythm. So those are all really foundational. So when I was trying for years to impact my sex hormones, I could not make a dent in my PCOS. I tried Vitex and saw palmetto and all those things and DIM and whatever, like to try to impact the sex hormones. But you have something at the foundation, you're never going to win because you're swimming upstream.
Yep.
So the foundation is working on blood sugar, insulin, stress. Like that is so, so, so crucial. And then you don't have to do the work over there anymore. Like things just, it's almost like you take a snow globe, you shake it up when you do that, and then things start to resettle in a different way. So some people, when we work together, they're like, whoa, my period was a little weird. Like it came kind of early, or like, you know, I had sort of a different period. And that's immediately when we start working on blood sugar. And it's like, you are impacting that system so fast, but now it's like, sometimes things get worse before they get better because it's trying to rebalance. So you're making all these shifts, but look how quickly you impacted that system. You took sugar out of your diet for 2 weeks. And all of a sudden you're getting a period early. Like you are so quickly and so drastically impacting the whole hormonal system of your body by what you eat and when you eat. So it's really, really powerful. It's really interesting to see. And sometimes we just need a few more cycles and then things will start to regulate. Because remember, it's like that snow globe falling. Things are going to be a little out of place at first, but then it all, you know, will fall nicely into place. So
No, I agree with you. And I think it's really interesting that you brought that up, because I was thinking about that earlier as you were talking, was like the relation between a woman's cycle and her metabolic health. Because, you know, I specialize in metabolic health, and like that's something I tell all my 90% of my clients are women, and something I tell them all, I'm like, your cycle being regular is one of the huge factors in whether I think you're metabolically healthy or not. Right. Because it's just how you fluctuate, right? Like when we're thinking about the, you know, the follicular phase and the luteal phase and progesterone and estrogen, and we think about those ins and outs, it's like, and all that's dictated by blood sugar regulation, all that's impacted by insulin, all that's impacted by stress management and blah, blah, blah. I love that you brought that up, because I think it's important. And I talk to like, when I'm like out and I'm talking to like a coworker, or I'm working with a family member, I'm having a conversation. And, you know, I'm talking to, you know, one of my cousins, and they're like, well, you know, I have painful periods. And it's like, I'm like, well, that's not normal. You know that, right? And she's like, but everybody has painful periods. Like, just because it's common does not mean it's normal, right? Like, and you may not believe this, but your food, and they don't associate, it's crazy. This is a whole rabbit hole. We don't have to go down right now, but it's like, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but it's so frustrating to me that we live in this world of chasing comfort instead of healing. And it's like, okay, so instead of eating the right things going into, you know, the start of my cycle, I'm going to eat comforting things instead. And there's no question as to, well, what if these things that are dopamine comforting are really being detrimental to my hormones and causing me to have these bad cycles that make me crave these comforting foods? What if I'm feeding into my own vicious world? And there's no sense of educating on, well, hey, look, hold on. One, why are you craving these things, right? Well, you're craving the sweets because cortisol is high, and we know that carbohydrates mitigate cortisol response. So maybe we should look at this from a different perspective. Well, you know, like the whole chocolate magnesium thing or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, let's have a different conversation. And maybe next cycle, let's try to eat to regulate. And then as we get up to it, let's see how it impacts it. And like you said, like when they notice that first time, when they change their eating, how much it impacts, whether it's early or late, doesn't matter. They see like, oh my gosh, that was like 30 days. And like something that because I never even like followed them hand in hand, my diet and my cycle. I never really realized just how much they play with each other. And people don't realize like we are what we eat. Like something, you know, when I was in the NTA, something that always stuck with me was, you know, they would say we are what we absorb. And it's like, when I tell people, I'm like, when you eat a Twinkie, you are made of a Twinkie. At some point, that Twinkie is part of you. Like you, like those fats are what make up your cell membranes. You literally are what you eat. And I don't think that, because this world's so busy, which is a whole nother part of this. I think that people don't really take the time to really think about how their food impacts the integrity of their body as a whole and the systems that run it.
Yeah, for sure. Love that. Great, great points.
Okay, so something you said was 4 to 5 menstrual cycles, and I like that because I think that it's important for people to understand that. I think that people in this space or in the health space in general that are trying to heal are way more impatient than they think they are. They think they're patient. They really do. I used to think I was impatient. I found out when I was trying to heal my body, because it's really interesting. I got into women's health because of my running, because I was able to associate the cortisol dependent environment of an endurance athlete with showed very similar signs to like a cycle or menopause. And like I saw those commonalities and it got me really fascinated with it. And I was able to, that's how I kind of got into it. And but I mean, I thought I was patient with my body. And like, no, like 30 days is not a long time. 60 days is 90 days is not a long time. And you know, like you said, 4 to 5 just to see the changes, the beneficial changes. And like most people aren't willing to stick it out for 2 months. So like can you like speak more to that? What do you see when it comes to like the time it takes to truly heal?
Yeah, I think that we can see huge changes immediately for certain things, right? So I, you know, in my blood sugar mastery program, I have people saying, "Oh my God, it's the first period I ever had without pain, and it's only been a few weeks." Like, so there's definitely things that can change very quickly. Another client, she just said, she's like, "I took out eggs and dairy last week because I thought that they were triggers for my acne after hearing you say that, and my skin has cleared up already in a week," right? So some things with nutrition, when you really hit the nail on the head, it's just so fast. It's so immediate, which is so cool because we can see these little wins or sometimes bigger wins as we're moving through. So in my programs, I always, like every single time we come on the call, we all share our wins. And some people are like, "I don't think I have a win." "Well, I did this. Well, I did this. Well, I've been consistent with this." We all have wins, and we have to focus on those because we're playing the long game with our health. There's like the main issue that we're trying to fix. So for me, it was like have a non-painful period and get it on time and don't have acne and no PMS symptoms. Like that was my main goal. So if I was looking for that and only that throughout like every month and be like, I didn't have it. I don't have this win. Like I haven't gotten, this hasn't happened yet. If I'm only focused on that, I'm not seeing the bigger picture. I'm not seeing that, like, oh, there's these micro changes where beneficial things are happening because things like a hormonal system takes a lot longer to regulate sometimes because it's like this symphony. And so there's all these moving parts and all these different factors impacting it. So sometimes it can be slower to change, especially if we're using a natural route. There's no like, you know, bioidentical hormones that we're taking, and you know, just certain things in our health take time. So I think it's important to see that. A client of mine just emailed me this morning and said, "By the way, I got my period for the first time in a really long time." I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "When, you know, when was the last time you got your period?" And she said, "Well, in 2016, I went on some kind of birth control and I haven't gotten a period. I got off of that, or I got the device removed in June." And then she started my program in September and she got her period. And now it's December. So just a few months later. So it took a few cycles of her, you know, dialing in the blood sugar and things like that. And boom, she gets her cycle several months later. So it's really, I mean, if she hadn't done my program, I can't, I don't. We don't know how long it would be, right? But sometimes that can it can take years for a cycle to come back. So it's amazing to see that, you know, the work that she's doing on her blood sugar and insulin, which is very controllable, which is like that's the other thing that's really cool, is that we can really control what's on our plate, right? We can control, if we have a stressful moment, we can take deep breaths and regulate our nervous system. We can control moving and, you know, getting out of the house and walking and after meals and lifting and things like that. It's not always easy, but we can do it, right? It's much harder to think about like, oh, how do I impact my estrogen levels? Like that feels a lot harder. It's so we can make a much easier impact. Like it really starts with what's on your plate, how much you're sleeping, how much you're moving, what are your stress levels, and we can do so much with those little factors.
No, I love that. I love that idea of those micro wins, right? The NSVs, like what's going on? Because I think oftentimes, you know, one of the biggest things that really, because you can, we live in a world where people feel busy and they feel tired all the time, and like that's normal. It's common. It's not normal, everybody. If you're feeling tired all the time, it's not normal. Just FYI. But you know, everybody's feeling tired and busy and all of that, and nobody really they don't start to raise a red flag until they see the scale start to go back up, right? Until something that like they're told by society is like a red flag is the thing that makes them freak out. And so that's the thing that they are hyper focused on when they come to us, or, you know, come to you, go, you know, do your mastery program. And what they need point out, and what you do such a good job of, is, you know, hey, like, yeah, we're not there yet. That's going to take a couple, you know, we have to regulate all these things, but like, look at this, like you're feeling better, your period's not painful, right? Like all these little things that I think a lot of people overlook because they're so fixated on what
What the
this
number on the scale is a lot of
exactly.
times. I have so many people who join my program, and I love that, like, whatever messaging I'm putting out there, I'm really attracting what feels like the right people who are super aligned. Because 99.9% of the time, if someone writes at the beginning, like, one of my goals is to lose weight, but I know that that's going to come when I'm healthy, and that's not my primary goal. I just want to feel good. I want to feel good in my body. I'm just like, yes, I love that. Because that is going to be, weight loss alone is not enough of a goal to really keep you motivated. It's not a deep enough why, but other things can be. And so reframing that in your mind, and you know, if you're a practitioner, like for your clients, is really, really helpful. And it's not a bad thing to want to lose body fat. I just want to say that, because I think that there's a lot of push in society now to be like, oh, you shouldn't want to lose weight because you should accept your body however it is. You can accept your body as it is and also want it to be in a more optimal state. That's also okay. And you can have those things at the same time. And you can want to lose body fat because it's better for your hormones, or it's better for your immune system, or it makes you feel better and more confident in yourself. It's not a bad thing to want to lose body weight. I'm just saying that it's not enough of a driver for most people to find health. So that's just something else to, I think that's important.
No, I agree with that. I mean, what's your why, right? If your why is shallow, you're not gonna be able to swim that far out. That's all I'm saying, right? You got to have a deep why. No, I love that. I think that's great. And yeah, oh man, the body positivity stuff. Oh man, yeah, that's a whole. We won't
Oh,
go
all
down.
foods can fit.
Oh, we don't go down that. We don't have to go down that rabbit
No
hole
such thing as
today.
bad food.
Or just like it's just
That's next
like, yeah. I
podcast.
thought, because I always tell people, I'm like, you should love yourself enough to want to be at your best, not stay as you are, right? So like,
Exactly.
right, but.
Yeah.
We can't say it. Anyways. Okay, so
Stay on topic.
yeah. So as far as, let's talk about the carbs now. I want to get into the carb situations, because I
Yeah.
know, because we kind of, this is like the meat of this, I feel, because I feel like it's such an interesting conversation, and there's a lot of rabbit holes. Like right now I'm thinking about like the carnivore space's pushback against fruit. I have like this whole there's like a whole it's like a whole rabbit hole. I don't know what your opinion is on that. I would love to hear it. But so you reintroduced carbs, and then you did the whole, you know, you said you went on the keto. And by the way, thank you for trusting my platform to open up about that and tell me. I appreciate that honors me. But I understand it, and I've seen people do that. You know, I had a client that came to me that was keto for 5, 6 years, and they tried PNS, you know, and they went, okay, well, I want to keep gaining weight. I'm like, all right, well, we should probably introduce carbs, right? And they were like, eh. I was like, all right, you don't listen to me. They did the PSMF and their blood sugar got worse and they gained more weight, and then and I was like, okay. All right, you've tried everything now. Yes. Okay, now let's do it. Let's do it this way. And you know, over time they started to see benefits. And I feel like it's for a lot of women in the space, because I don't feel like men struggle with this as much, unless they're like really intense athletes, because they have a 24-hour cycle on their hormones. It's just not the same, which is why I think the conversation needs to be had, because I don't like that there are influencers out there with doctors or not doctors that have hundreds of thousands of followers that are men too, specifically, that paint this black and white narrative of this is how you should eat. And it's like there's no sense of gender differences and hormones or body systems, and it's so wrong. But
Oh, couldn't agree
yeah,
more.
but it, what's your opinion on that? Why do you think that there's such this
this weird tension that we're in right now when it comes to people really experiencing bioindividuality with their diets and health.
So one of the biggest things is that I think that nutrition and the human body, they are extremely complex topics, and there's differences for everybody, but there are almost like camps of where this is going to be a really powerful intervention for X. And so if you have X, this could work for you, right? And so there's a big group of people who see changes for something. And then just like me with the paleo, wanting to paleo harder because it worked at once, we don't know how to shift because we're not like general people. I had to go back to school to become a nutritional, to know how to heal my own body. So people are at work, they're busy, and they're like, what should I do? It's like, oh, this person has a similar thing for me. I'm going to do what they're doing. And they don't have a nutrition degree. They don't understand bioindividuality. They don't understand the full workings of the body, as they shouldn't, because they're, you know, that's not their profession. And so it gets easy to hear a simplified message: cut out all the carbs, just eat meat. Like, or the other side of the spectrum, like, don't eat meat. That's going to kill you. Just eat plants. You're going to be fine. Like, there's not that much difference between some of those messaging, like some of the messaging out there, right? And so I think that a lot of it comes from a really good place. Like, oh my gosh, this healed me and this helped me and completely transformed my life. And I know there's out people out there who could be helped by this information, because that's sort of my approach. But I think a lot of people, you know, who are influencers, maybe they're not clinical. So maybe they just look at research studies, which I think there is a lot of shortcoming to just looking at research studies and not working with people. I think that there's other people who are just, they're very knowledgeable because they've been in this space and they've healed themselves. But, and then I think there's the people who want to get the granularity of the nuances out there. And that's harder to post on Instagram. It's harder to say, well, if you're here in your cycle, you should have this. But if you're doing this, you should do this. But if you're postmenopausal, you should try to do. It's just easier to say, don't eat carbs. It's harder. It's like, it's a harder conversation to have. And it's like, well, if you do this, then you need this. If you do that, like, and people are like, oh, post a meal plan or post what you eat. And I'm like, why do you want me to post what I eat? So you can eat what I eat, because what I eat is not what you need. And so I hesitate so much to post what I eat because I don't want people copying me. And what I want them to do is think for themselves. And that's why my program, Blood Sugar Mastery, we use the nutritional assessment questionnaire that we use in NTA school. And every single person, it's basically like individual coaching, but in a group format. No one is doing the same thing. There are no meal plans because everyone is on a different path. And I've tried to figure out, like, how on earth do I do this? How do I get the bioindividuality into a program? Because I do not feel okay in my soul to give someone a, like, hey, we all need to do the same thing. Even people with the same diagnosis, like the same, you have reactive hypoglycemia. No, there's going to be different causes. There's going to be different nuances. Like, this one's, it's coming from the adrenal. This one, it's coming from nutrient deficiencies. This one's from an infection. Like, there's different causes. There's different underlying factors. And if we don't honor all those root causes, like how a person digests fat, what their adrenal system is like, what their stress levels are like, we're missing the mark. And so I think this is just hard to portray. And then you get people being like, this is better, that's better. And it's like, it's not about that. It's like, what works for you? And also knowing what works for you now will shift. And that's something that's really hard because people don't know how to shift. They don't know where to go next. And so if you are keto and it's working pretty well, but not working that hard, what do you do next? What does everybody do next? Carnivore. Like, because, oh, okay, that's a shift I
It's
know.
the
What happens when carnivore doesn't work? Do beef, do,
PSMF.
yeah, PSMF, do beef and water, like beef and water and salt, right? Like, so we know how to like restrict more. So let's do paleo, then we do autoimmune paleo, then we do keto autoimmune, then we can restrict. But what a lot of people need, I'm getting loud. What a lot of people need is we need to go backwards. So I talked with Tara Garrison, and she uses the example of a pendulum. And I love that thought, because I use it kind of, I thought about it as sort of like a mountain, but I like the idea that a pendulum is going to swing back and forth. So what a lot of us do is like, we'll go to an extreme. We've lived an extreme lifestyle. The standard American diet, let's just put it out there, is extreme. It's extremely horrible for human health, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one end of the pendulum. So what we need to do a lot of times to heal from that extreme damage that we've caused ourselves is swing the other way. Keto, carnivore, paleo, like whatever sort of, you know, whole foods, we're swinging the other way to extremity. But where I think a lot of people would do really well ending up is somewhere just let the pendulum kind of swing to normal and come down to like the middle ground, right? Where it's like, okay, we cut out all the carbs. Now I think I need some carbs. And it's like, oops, I did too many because I got carried away. Let me do a week of keto. Like, oh, I'm kind of finding the balance. And then we swing and then we're somewhere hovering around the center, right? So I think that we're drawn towards those extremes because it's cut and dry. It's like, oh, just do this. It's a simple explanation, but it's much more nuanced than that. And I think it's hard for people to find, but I do find that what people might need to do next, or like, okay, I'm doing keto, it's really working really well. Don't be afraid to try a carb up. Don't be afraid to, you know, use these carbs around workouts, around your cycle, because carbs are not the devil. It's the quantity that you were probably consuming them in before that mm-hmm. wasn't working for you. And I do acknowledge that some people are just not going to do well with carbs. They have sugar addictions. They have epilepsy. They have certain conditions. Again, bioindividuality. What I'm saying is not for every single person. It's finding what works best for you and being open to changing that as you go. We live on a cyclical planet. I'm not eating the exact same in the winter as I do in the summer. I'm not eating the same here in Florida as I do if I were to move back up to New York. So it's like, we need to look at the time of the year, the time of the month. If you're a cycling woman, we need to look at all these different factors, and it's confusing. And that's why maybe the answer of this whole thing is stop outsourcing your health. stop DIYing your health and like outsource it to work with a professional. Like, we imagine you only have one car for the rest of your life. You're like, this is it. This is the only car you're ever going to have. Are you going to watch videos on YouTube and listen to podcasts about how to fix the car if something happens to it? Or are you going to take it to a professional mechanic and be like, I'm going to take it to the dealership because, you know, I'm not going to take it to some like Joe Schmo, you know, mechanic shop. You're going to take it to the best of the best because you only have one vehicle for the rest of your life. The same thing with our body. We just have one body our whole entire life. And we think that because we have, like, everyone eats, so we think that we're all experts on nutrition. But what I think a lot of people need is to understand what the symptoms are telling you. So that way you can listen to what your body needs and give it, and then try to give it what it needs and experiment with that. So we're not looking for like one diet and this is going to be the diet that I'm going to eat forever. No, I like the idea of eating real food most of the time, right? But that's wide. So it's almost like I started with paleo, and then I had to go to keto. And then now I'm sort of back in sort of a little paleo camp, but it's going to keep changing. It's going to keep shifting. So I'll stop. I'll let you jump in.
No. I love it. I love all this, because I agree with you. I mean, I would just be repeating you at this point. And I think that's super important. Well, because I think some of my clients find it super frustrating, because we'll get on the first call and they ask all the basic questions of like, okay, well, what about fasting? What about carbs? Right. And my answer is always initially, well, it depends. We need to find out. We're going to find out. Cause like it's not black and white. And people, and as you said, I think you hit around the head, because I don't. And let me say that I know I came off a little bit intense when I asked the question initially, but like, I don't think that most people are doing, I don't think the issues that we have in the health space right now are because people are coming at it from a place of ill intent. Of course. I think it's the way that we communicate the things that we are passionate about without considering the tribalistic nature of humans. Tribalistic messages are popular. people like to feel like they're a part of something. And so like, if I'm like following, you know, like the Paul Saladinos of the world or the Ken Berries of the world or whatever, it's like, that's my group, that's my clique. And even if I'm hurting myself, I'm not willing to say it's wrong because that's what I feel a part of. And I will continue to go down that rabbit hole. Like, even if it means I have to chop my own leg off, like, I'm going to remain part of this group. And right. I've seen that, you know, again and again. And the reality is that the message that you and I preach, this bio-individualistic approach, it's not popular. Like, no, I remember
it's not, it doesn't go viral at because all. It's like, no, but I don't care because I need to stay true to myself. Bingo. And you know, my message is reaching the people who it needs to reach. And sometimes people need to fall off the deep end, trying something and like doing it, you know, to death and being like, okay, I need to find another approach that doesn't feel so extreme. That's not so dogmatic. Mm-hmm. And I think that as NTPs or FNTPs, I always forget that F, that we tend to not be as dogmatic because we are taught that everybody's individual and we see it. We see it every single day. Like, oh, if I put every single person through the same thing, I'm not recommending the same thing for everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm recommending a lot of similarities because, mm-hmm. you know, obviously people are coming to me for similar issues. So there's a lot of overlap, yeah. but there's nuance. And I think that's important. And I think one of the questions you asked earlier that I didn't get to is kind of like, why would a person need to add back in carbs? Like, did we talk about that?
Or I haven't asked yet, but I definitely wanted to ask. No. Okay, We just got on the social tangent.
Yeah. Okay.
but let's actually, I'm glad you asked. Let's switch over to that. So, because I think, and real quick, before we dive into that, have you not noticed, I just like to clear this record straight because people will think this and I've had to like clarify this on people responding to me about podcasts. Your body does not respond the same to carbs once you are fat adapted as it does when you're not fat adapted. So once you've accepted metabolic flexibility, it's very different, vastly different.
It is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just like to clarify that because people are like, well, because one thing I don't like is when I'm talking to somebody that's been strict keto and they're like, well, I tried the carb game. And I'm like, but you haven't tried carbs since you've been keto. Your body mm-hmm. will handle them so differently if you're just willing to, you know, try them. And I get that. Cause like, I remember I was strict keto for 3 years and it was almost like a point of pride for me. I was like, I didn't want to eat sweet potato because I was like, I'm proud. I haven't tripped up, you know? And like, but oh my gosh, if I wouldn't have had that sweet potato, the impact it made on my ability to run, my injuries, that's a whole nother story. But like that, it's cause I took that chance. And so many people are like not willing to take that chance. And like I said, they're like hurting themselves over it. So what have you noticed when it comes to reintroducing carbohydrates after becoming fat adapted, metabolically flexible? Who would it be good for? What is your experience with all of that?
Yeah. So I've never verbally or even mentally listed out all these side effects or possible symptoms, but and feel free to jump in. You mentioned, so the reasons why someone who is on a prolonged ketogenic or carnivore diet may want to add back in carbs, right? That's maybe the first question. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned difficulty recovering from injuries,
yep.
Blood sugar going up yep. all of a sudden, gaining weight again, mm-hmm. Losing hair. That was mm-hmm. me. My hair thinned for sure. Oof. Every time I fasted, I got cold. I got freezing cold. And I was like, I don't think I should fast anymore because I think I'm effing up my thyroid.
Thyroid, yeah.
I was just like, I think that I should not do this. And it's interesting that that never happened before, but then it started happening. And it was every time I was like, oh, I'm so cold. And I was like, oh, I don't think that's good. So, and then just reintroduction of symptoms that you had gotten rid of.
Yes, exactly. So this is like the sixth episode of this podcast series, but I just recorded the first one yesterday and uploaded it. And I talked about that, how like, it's almost like chronic keto for some people puts them in a mild version of what they were before they started keto.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. Because what I think, this is where I use the mountain example. Where keto, it's like you're climbing up this mountain because you're getting rid of all these symptoms and then you reach the peak of its effectiveness, and then you backslide, and now you're going down, and now all these symptoms are returning. So you want to stay at the top of the mountain. And so the top of the mountain, you've reached keto's peak effectiveness, and now it's time to do something else. Now we have to shift this difficult shift where we don't know what to do. And the answer is not go carnivore. It's reintroduce carbohydrates, whole food carbohydrates at the end of a meal in a small quantity to start. Because a lot of us can't tolerate a lot of carbohydrates. And I think most humans can't tolerate loads of carbohydrates because that's not what our diets were initially. Look at, you know, winters and things like that. There's not a lot of carbs around, maybe more in the tropics or where, you know, like where there was tropical fruit and things like that. Maybe that's, you know, if that's sort of your background, that might be, you might, I know there's differences.
Yeah.
But in general, I think that the amount of carbohydrates, it's not like let's go back to doing what we were doing before we were keto because we can tolerate carbs better. I'm not eating, I'm not waking up and having an acai bowl and then in the middle of the day having just a banana and then a Lara bar and then having a sweet potato with my dinner. Like if I were to go back to that amount and frequency of carbohydrates, it would start impacting me again. So we're not talking about like, just eat all the carbs. It's going to be fine. That's not what we're saying either. We're saying, find the amount, use your CGMs, like test your blood sugar, get dialed in with your symptoms, because I don't have that big of a carb threshold. I think that my body, my whole family, they're all insulin resistant. None of them are diabetic, but they're all insulin resistant. Three of my cousins have PCOS, they're overweight. I look at them and I'm like, wow, this is what I would be looking like and feeling like if I wasn't the way it was. Like, I feel like I have a very big battle to fight. So I know that my carb tolerance is not going to be what I would want it to be, but I do small amounts of carbs at the end of the meals and it's great. It's like, I'll do a clementine, half of a green apple, some berries. I do great with fruit as opposed to like starches. You too?
Oh yes. I have a whole rabbit hole of fruit I want to go down, but we'll do it in a second.
Yeah. I do well with fruit. I digest it really well. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel satiated. I also do well with I'm also finding roots. So beets are great for me. I can do carrots. I can do butternut squash. Sweet potatoes are a little difficult for me.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I've gotten better with them, but they do spike my blood sugar a lot. They're very, very high glycemic, but I do best with fruits and roots. And I think that those are potentially some of the easier carbs to digest for a lot of people. Of course, there's going to be differences, you know, FODMAP issues and all that, but I think that that could be really helpful. So we talked about hair loss, recovery, workout performance. That would be another one. But yeah, so adding these carbs back in and just starting slowly. It doesn't, you know, one meal, like, and maybe it's not dinner because my blood sugar stays super elevated when I eat carbs for dinner. So I do lunch carbs. Lunch carbs feel great. Breakfast carbs feel awesome because I'm utilizing all that glucose that I just put in the system, you know, carbs before or after a workout. Amazing. It's crazy how different it feels because in the past, if I had carbs before a workout, I'd get super lightheaded and dizzy, but like during the workout, I need to sit down, but now no, like it's just different. And it's really cool because like I said, it's like having your carbs and eating them too.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely.
We've worked hard for this.
Yeah, no, earning your carbs. I definitely think that there's weight to that statement. Okay. So it's really interesting about the sweet potato because I had a podcast record with Leanne Vogel and her and me are good friends. And it's something we talk about is how, or I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but like, so sweet potatoes, if I eat a sweet potato with like beef, my blood sugar goes up 17 points, like nothing, literally nothing. Whereas if I have white potato, it just takes it. Whereas like her, if she has white potato, nothing. Like 5 points, nothing, but sweet potato skyrockets. So we have completely different reactions to different tubers. Wow. And I mean, and like you said, like, and that's where it gets, that's where like, I think this is where it's really, cause like if you as an individual try to go down some of these rabbit holes, you're going to make your head hurt, which is why it's good to have a professional that you can hire because like you and I both, you even brought it up just a second ago about, like, you know, regions, ancestral regions where your ancestors grew up, your blood type, all of those, like, diets and ideas have some truth, and it's bringing all that truth together to make a plan that works for you as an individual. Like, some people that I know that have, clients I've worked with that have ancestors from the Caribbean, man, they do great with fruit in the winter time. And then I have clients that are more Irish and Scottish, and they only can have like some cassava root and maybe some white potato if they do have carbs in their diet during the winter time. Like, it just varies. So there's so many things that you have to think about.
Speaking of cassava, talk about a spike.
Really? Cassava doesn't do anything to me.
Well, it was in a paleo cereal. It was a cassava based cereal. They sent it to me. This, and I don't like to call out the brand, but my blood sugar, I'll tell you off air. Okay. My blood sugar spiked to 168. And at the peak of that spike, I've never seen it that high on a CGM ever. My blood sugar has never gone maybe above 140 on a CGM. It was 168. And at the very peak of that spike, guess what my brain started thinking? It was like, go have another bowl of that cereal. Do we have ice cream in the house? Maybe you should go get some. Do you have any chocolate here? It was like, I was like, oh my God, the sugar dragon's back. Like, he's still in there. He just hibernates. Yeah. You know, you can wake him up. So instead of doing that, I was like, oh my goodness. And I had had this cereal before I had a CGM, but I wasn't going to post about it until I tested it on the CGM. And I had multiple bowls of this cereal. Okay. P.S. And so this time I intercepted it, and the spike, I went P.S. again, I had green beans and steak before the cereal. It wasn't even a naked carb. It wasn't even on its own. It was after steak, protein, fat, and fiber. And what I did was I had to like power walk for 30 minutes to get it fully down. And then I felt totally okay. Wow. But I mean, power walk for a full 30 minutes. So it's great. Like, I think this is a callback to get yourself a CGM, because nothing's going to tell you the data, not even, you know, working with a professional. I think a CGM paired with someone helping to like tell you what to do with some of this information. But that's why I'm starting to have the CGM, is like, it's not required for blood sugar mastery, but it's very, very, very highly recommended and encouraged. And so far everyone's gotten one in this round, and it's just so different because you can get so much more information. It takes the guesswork out. It's like, oh, how I want to start adding back in carbs, but I don't know how much to add. Well, start with a certain amount, pick a carb, start with an amount, have it at the end of your meal. And did it spike you too much? Okay, have less next time. Like, it's easy. It becomes easy to figure it out when you have the information right there. Oh, sweet potato spiked the hell out of my blood sugar. Let me try white potato. Oh, that was better. Cool. Now I'm going to do white potato instead of sweet potato. Easy. So it helps make this decision for you. It takes out some of that guesswork. You know, like my sugar stays elevated if I eat a lot of carbs at night. Well, guess who doesn't eat carbs at night anymore? You know, like, it's just, it becomes intuitive if you're not looking outside of yourself for the answer, but you're looking like, what does my body need right now? And seeing, you know, seeing the impact of a bad night's sleep, seeing the impact of different times in your cycle. I have a lot of people saying, how do I keep my blood sugar controlled the week before my cycle? It's like, well, you're going to be more insulin resistant because your estrogen goes down. And so you're going to have a harder time. You're going to have the higher, metabolic rate. You're going to have more insulin resistance. So what do you do with that information? Right. Mm-hmm. And it becomes tricky, but it's really helpful at having the CGM as a support for helping you to add in these carbs.
No, I agree. Okay. So I want to go down the carbs in your cycle thing, because I think this will be an interesting conversation. But before that, we talked about the symptoms of needing to add carbs back in after being on a long-term ketogenic diet, possibly, and the symptoms that could kind of be like the red flags of, okay, maybe I need to try this. What, and I have my theory about this, and I've expressed this before. What do you think is the key player in those symptoms being triggered?
I think that the body thinks it's a perpetual winter, and that the winter is not ending, that famine is happening, and that the body thinks that it needs to start saving everything. So I think the thyroid is like the first domino to fall. It's like, hey, reserve and don't expend energy. We're going to downregulate the metabolic rate. And I think that it's because the lack of the glucose coming in is like, because think about it, humans were in ketosis in winter when food was, or when food was scarce. If it was for a very, 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 very long period of time, the adaptive response is that we're going to hold on to body fat. That keeps us alive, right? Because, oh, there's not a lot of energy around, so we better start storing it. So it's going to restore that energy. So if you look at tribes and things like that, like the Maasai and all that, if food is scarce, it's only scarce for a couple of days, and then they get food, and then it's better, and then they do it again, and they get better. So there's cycles in nature. There's cycles. There's feast and famine, feast and famine. So if we're constantly famining and stressed because our modern lifestyle is so stressful, and then we're doing cold plunging and we're fasting and we're doing keto and we're trying carnivore and we're protein sparing modified fasting and dropping this and restricting this and high intensity interval, that's stress from every single angle. It's like our bodies are too stressed. And so we want to think about, what I say to my clients is, we want to think about ketosis, fasting, carnivore, exercise. These are all stressors, and they can have benefits, because we do them in the right quantity at the right time, our body will adapt and get stronger. But if we keep doing it, so if we're like, exercise is good, so I'm going to exercise all around the clock every single day, all the time, what's going to happen? My body's going to crash and burn because it's too much and it can't recover. Same thing with ketosis. It's not a bad thing to do. And you definitely need to do it for a little bit of a longer stretch at the beginning. But I say now that, like, when you can, add in those carb ups, because you don't want your body to think that it is a perpetual winter. If you're doing fasting, take time off fasting. Don't be like, I do intermittent fasting, I do 18-6 every day. Don't do the same thing every day. The body adapts and gets so used to what we're doing that variety is so important to, like, kickstart these things, send a message, hey, we're safe. Oh, food's a little scarce. Why don't you ramp up some of these, you know, survival things, and it will get stronger and, you know, have autophagy and all these important processes. And then we refeed it. We're like, hey, there's carbs, we're safe, there's glucose, there's no famine, yay, there's feast, relax, rebalance. And then boom, we stress it again. That's what the body needs. And by doing perpetual ketosis forever and ever, amen, is going to start our body, I think, like, thinking that it's this perpetual winter, and it's going to start backsliding.
Yeah, no, I like that response. Because I've always come at it from a place of, like, cortisol is the main kicker here. Cortisol is the main kicker. Yeah. And
because it's, yes, and it's going to drive up cortisol. I didn't mention the hormone, the important hormone, but yes, because it's too stressful. So it's the cortisol that is driving it all. And when I, not surprisingly, I did a saliva cortisol test, and guess who had high cortisol all over the map? So obviously, by taking out the carbs, it was too stressful. Carbs help to mitigate that cortisol response. So it's been really helpful.
Yeah, in fact, I see it as such a red flag that when I see, like, I'll get a Dutch test from a client. And when I see high cortisol, my first question is always, how long have you been keto? You know, and they're always like, for years. And I'm like, I can tell.
Like, oh my God, you can, because I'm so metabolically flexible. It's like, nope.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I definitely want to get you back on for a round two.
I need you to come on my podcast too, because we have much to talk about.
Yes. I think this is far from over. So, for those that want to find you before then, where can they find you?
My Instagram is Danielle Hamilton Health. My website is daniellehamiltonhealth.com. And my podcast is Unlock the Sugar Shackles. And my group coaching program is Blood Sugar Mastery. And that information could be found on my website and on my Instagram.
Love that. And I will make sure all of that's in the show notes. Danielle, it has been a pleasure. I have loved this chat. Thank you so much for coming on.
Me too. Thank you so much. I could talk about this easily all day. So This is great. This is my kind of conversation. I love the nuances and I love breaking up that dogma because it's not one size fits all and you're not broken. If keto doesn't work for you, you're not broken. If you're not getting the same results as X influencer who does carnivore. And the other thing we said off air that I think is important is that you do not know what someone is eating just because they say they're carnivore and they're getting all these great results or they're keto and they're doing this. You don't know what they're doing behind closed doors. I mean, look at Liver King. I mean, we kind of knew, but you don't know what someone's doing. So stop comparing yourself to other people and saying, if I'm not getting the results, what do I need? If I'm not getting the same results from that person, it's because I have a very different body. And what do I need to do instead? Who can I talk to who is familiar with this? And perhaps it's not either of us. It's, you know, someone else. Like, it's find a person whose message resonates with you and get the help you need for your body, because this stuff is complicated. You know, I have practitioners for my own stuff because I don't understand. Like, I don't understand organic acid tests and mineral tests. Like, I wish I did. I wish I could know everything, but you know, we don't. And that's why, you know, work with a professional if you are struggling, or, you know, get into the nuance, because it's not, you're not going to find it via someone's meal plan on ketosis that's free on Instagram. That's not going to solve all your problems. So,
no, 1000%, 1000%. Yeah, no, this conversation is definitely not over. So, we would definitely talk about it again soon.
Awesome.